This is a Vault Studios production. This show contains adult subject matter and is meant for mature audiences only.
I'm Brendan Keefe, and this is The Officer's Wife, Chapter 3. It's early in the morning of April 15th, 2016. Jessica Boynton is in critical condition at Atlanta Medical Center after she was found hours earlier in a locked closet of her apartment with an apparent gunshot wound to her head. Her husband, Griffin Police Officer Matthew Boynton, is now at the police station, where the Georgia Bureau of Investigation has been called in to investigate what happened.
See, today's date is it's Friday, April 15th, 2016. Time's approximately 4:18 a.m. This is Assistant Special Agent in Charge, Chris DeMarco.
They know that Matthew got a text from his wife after midnight saying she'd been thinking about suicide. They know that Matthew rushed home and says he heard gunshots coming from his apartment. Jessica was found unresponsive, bleeding from a wound to her head. Matthew's service weapon is found underneath her body. There are two bullet holes in nearby walls. And while paramedics seem to think a bullet entered her skull, there's no sign of an exit wound. From what they can tell at this stage, it appears at least one of the shots was fired at a downward angle toward the top of Jessica's head.
I just want to preface it by saying, you know, this is a criminal investigation. Obviously, that's why we've been requested to come in. And, you know, the interview is strictly voluntary. If you want to talk to me, that's totally up to you.
I'll let everything
on. Okay. I mean, that's fine. I just want to get that. I just want to preface the interview by letting you know that.
As DeMarco begins questioning Matthew about the events of the night, Matthew quickly opens up, talking about his relationship to Jessica and the state of the marriage.
I'm sure, as you've heard, I'm getting a divorce. I was.
No, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, we're supposed to be getting a divorce.
How long have you guys been married?
Well, we've been together a little over 4 years.
Okay.
We've been married since October.
Okay, so been together 4 years, married since October.
Yes.
And there's your high school sweetheart?
Yes, sir.
And so you said you and Jessica are... When did you guys decide you were going to get a divorce?
Well, it's a long story, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
We had our first child, and we had an incident after he was born where she was keeping me from being able to leave to go to my granddad's because it was an argument. I said, look, please, you know, quit aggravating me. I just want to go next door.
Mm-hmm.
That way I can cool off. I ran to my granddad's because I told her, I said, look, let me go get some shoes real quick. So she thought I was going to the bedroom to go get shoes. So she took off that way, and that was when I could run out the door. So I had to run out the back door and jump the fence, and that's when I ran to my granddad for help.
How come she didn't want you to leave?
I don't remember.
Okay. So you go to your granddad's house?
Right next door.
Okay. And this is the sheriff's house, or okay, so you go to the sheriff's house. The police report you filed about that. What did you file about that?
I don't remember everything that took place. I think I want to say that Sergeant Fennell labeled it a simple battery on her, but she was not arrested.
Okay, it was before you guys got married.
Yes, it's way before we got married. Yes.
Okay.
Because we had actually broken up after that.
So you filed a police report, and you think Sergeant Fennell might have wrote it up as simple battery?
I want to say that he did.
But she was not arrested?
Yes, she was not arrested.
Okay.
But I believe that's what he did.
As a police officer, Matthew Boynton didn't seem to hesitate to call police when things happened at his own home, when he says Jessica lashed out with words and sometimes physically. He goes on to tell another story. This time, the one about Jessica's affair years earlier, how she went on her own to look at a wedding venue and ended up having car trouble, how someone stopped and offered help and then ended up in bed together.
So who is this guy?
I don't remember his name. I don't. But eventually, over time, you know, I kept asking her about it, and she finally told me. She said, yeah, I had an affair. And I talked to the guy. And it's like, look, man, you know, can you just be honest with me? Did y'all have sex? And he said, yeah, we did. I said, well, look, I just want to let you know she's pregnant. He said, oh, I know that baby's mine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the same time, I was in love with her. You know, that didn't matter to me. You know, I was young, and I still wanted to take care of it. So we had separated, and then I let her back in the house. And, you know, eventually she had the baby. And, you know, here recently she did confirm that the second baby's not mine, which I knew that.
DeMarco is beginning to get this picture of a complicated relationship. The calls to police, a second child who appears not to be Matthew's. He digs in.
Now, on the birth certificate, what does she have? What do they have as a father?
I signed this.
You signed the birth certificate?
Yeah,
okay.
He's got my last name.
Okay, but that's what she told you. But, I mean, is any blood test or anything confirmed that, or is this?
I was going to do that soon because, like I said, we're getting a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, she had told me here recently within the past couple of days, hey, Tyler's not yours. Because that had come up because we're discussing, you know, whether or not to have a uncontested divorce or go to court. That's one of the conversations we had today, too.
Matthew says today, meaning the day before, when everything seemed to finally unravel. But when DeMarco asks if there were other incidents, Matthew offers up more details.
Are there any other incidents that over your 4 years that you were together, or was those kind of the two major ones?
Those were the major ones, and then here and there, you know, it's just, you know, small arguments or, you know, for a while, off and on for a while, we would be good. We wouldn't argue or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a few times that she has hit me, and I would tell my granddad about it because I wouldn't know who else to tell. I don't want her to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never want her to go to jail. Because I love her, that's my wife,
mm-hmm.
or at the time, my fiance. So I would call my granddad and say, you know, what do I do? And I would just take it, go outside, you know, do whatever.
So she would get physical every once in a while, slap you or something like that?
Yes.
Hit you, punch you, or just slap you?
It was always my right arm and my left cheek and my face.
That she would hit you?
But typically, it was usually my arm. I think I can only recall once that she had hit me in the cheek.
So mostly it was your arm?
Yeah.
Okay. A punch or a slap? Is that what?
It was always, it was usually a punch.
All right. Now, in any of those incidents when she did slap you, besides the one with Sergeant Fernald, did you ever, you just called your granddad and asked him, hey, what do I do here? And what would he tell you? Just leave or?
The main thing that me and him used to do is work out. Most of the time I tried to work out, whether it's just push ups or going to the gym, just one of those things.
Okay. So,
but he always told me just try to stay calm and don't say nothing. Just let it go, because I never wanted to get her in trouble.
Right,
I loved her.
Despite the ups and downs, despite the baby born outside the relationship, despite everything, Matthew and Jessica decide to keep the wedding date. But Matthew tells DeMarco that things didn't improve between him and Jessica.
Pretty much every day. Up until that point, she would yell at me, and she would yell at the kids and cuss at them. And I would beg her, Jessica, please, we have neighbors, don't cuss at them. Please don't cuss at me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, effing quit, or what the F are you doing? You know, just different stuff like that. And I would beg her, and like, Jessica, please. Because, you know, I was in law enforcement, too. So, Jessica, please, we have neighbors, please don't do that. And she would, I mean, it was almost a daily thing.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, it was too much. Matthew says he brought up divorce.
So you initiated telling her you wanted a divorce, or, and what did she say when you asked her about wanting a divorce? Did she?
Well, it started out with her behavior. I've been wanting one for a couple months now, because she would come randomly wake me up and start yelling at me, and, you know, again, with the kids, you know, in between working here, you know, with the stress, and then coming home,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'd be like, why the F did you leave this effing milk out? You know, Tolan could have gotten that. Or, you know, he would spill it on the couch by accident. It's like, Jessica, I worked 12 hours. I said, I went to bed shortly after. I know I messed up. I forgot. And I was bad about leaving stuff out. And that's usually what sparked the argument.
Okay.
But she would wake me up in the middle of my sleeping period, especially on nights, and when I was on night shift, and, you know, yell at me, or, you know, she would wait till I walk in the door. And she would throw things at a few times, but it wasn't anything ever at me or at the children. It was always like a fork, you know, throw it in the sink or something.
DeMarco asks about Jessica's reaction to getting a divorce, if she agreed.
She wanted to know why, and I told her that, you know, with all the yelling going on and with her cussing at the kids, said, you know, I love you, I'm still in love with you, but doing, you know, being in law enforcement, I've worked my whole life to be where I'm at. I've skipped out on school parties, everything. I said, Jessica, I love you and I'm in love with you, but I can't risk my job. I said, I can assure you that I always will. The kids will always be provided for no matter what happens. But I'm not happy anymore, and I can't keep doing this.
But then the GBI agent shifts the attention to Matthew.
Did you have, since things weren't working out with your wife, did you have a girlfriend or anything? Or
I had a friend that was a girl, mm-hmm. or is a girl. And I believe she had the same thing.
Jessica, that she had a...
But I don't have any proof of that.
You just assume that?
Yeah, or just assume.
What would lead you to believe that she had something on the side?
Because she's always been real prone to having male friends all through high school. Mm-hmm. I went with one. She was actually in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the incident where she cheated on me and said that was the guy's baby.
Right.
So, you know, I didn't trust her, but I would never go home and just ride by and just see, you know, who's at the house. You know, I just kind of looked at it like, well, you know, if it happens, it happens, I guess, because it's already happened once.
Your girlfriend, I mean, was it a intimate relationship? It was something since you weren't happy at home? Were you just, you know?
Well, it started out when I was talking to her. You know, I very rarely tell people what's going on in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I told her, you know, it's like, look, you know, me and her are having a hard time, and she would listen. You know, and I wanted a female's point of view on it because the few guys that I've told, you know, they're only going to know so much about what I should do. So, you know, with a female, I felt like I could talk to her about it and everything.
Was there anything sexual between you guys? And like you said, if there was, then that's your business.
Recently, yeah.
Okay. So that's been going on for how long?
Just a very short period of time.
Okay. A month?
No, not even that long.
Oh, okay. So just really recent?
Yeah, really recent, like maybe a couple weeks.
Okay.
And that's been as, you know, along with me and Jessica not getting along either.
Right. And when did you tell Jessica that you wanted a divorce? Did the relationship with Courtney and that kind of coincide around the same time?
All the problems were before.
Right, but I mean, when you told Jessica, hey, I'm getting a divorce, and then eventually it was like...
No, she was shortly after I informed her.
Okay, I got you.
From what I can remember.
Okay. Then we're leading up to, like, today. Is there anything else in between that's kind of significant before that, what led up today that you can remember?
The past couple of weeks, we've been trying to discuss, you know, how we're going to get the kids and... Yeah, she had talked to her attorney. I had to cancel mine because I couldn't afford to do it this week. I had to wait till I got paid next week.
To get an attorney?
Yeah.
Finally, DeMarco hones in on the past 24 hours, what Matthew did, where he was, where Jessica was, how she seemed.
From what I can remember, she wasn't that bad off. It was actually better than what it usually was, mm-hmm. you know, with her yelling or, you know, I hope you get a good attorney or, you know, something like that is what it usually was. But
and
today we're actually talking about the kids, so we were fine.
So she seemed okay to you today?
Yeah, I mean, she seemed better than what she usually was far as, you know, since we've been in the argument with the divorce.
But Matthew says he spent most of the day with his girlfriend, Courtney Calloway. It's where he'd been spending a lot of time lately.
It's like I told her, I'll be at home at night, but I don't want to be home during the day
mm-hmm.
because we argue all day. And, you know, with it being an apartment, thin walls. And I'm the courtesy officer over there, so I don't want, you know, it's not going to look good if we start arguing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would come home at night and just stay gone during the day.
Okay.
I left a little after 8, I think, from there to come home.
When he gets home that night, Matthew says he finds Jessica's mood has changed.
You know, she was ill and agitated, you know, starting the usual questions and the argument.
About what? What was she talking about?
Same thing between what the kids and what I was doing and stuff like that. And then she had mentioned needing to go to Walmart.
As we know, Jessica and Matthew argued at Walmart. He called Griffin police to make a report on the altercation. Officer Adam Trammell came to the apartment, wrote a report, talked to Matthew, and never saw Jessica. Matthew eventually leaves to eat dinner with his friend Josh Guthrie. Then he gets that text from Jessica, comes back home, and runs into the apartment when he hears gunshots.
You pass the closet in the bathroom, you go into the master bedroom, obviously you don't see Tyler there. Then you go back, you realize the closet door is locked.
Yeah, I've seen the door
shut. Or you see it shut, so then you jiggle the handle, you know it's locked. You call out to Jessica, you didn't hear anything. Then you went out to the kitchen, grabbed your radio.
And cut it on.
Cut it on.
For the best of my knowledge, And I believe at that point, that's when I went outside, and I couldn't hardly talk on the radio.
Is that what just, you went outside for what, better radio reception, or just?
To get out, because I didn't know. I didn't know if she was.
But you didn't go maybe check, did you ever go back in to check on the kids to find where Tolan was?
I didn't know where she was at in the house.
So you just said,
At some point, Brian Jones told me not to go in because he was on
the board. That over the radio?
Yes, I believe
so. Okay, so you never, after you got on the radio and you were outside communicating on the radio, you never went back in to actually just check on the kids for your safety. You're thinking she could still be,
I didn't know where she was. I was dealing with a possible active scenario where she still had the gun and she had shot Tyler. Because, you know, with people, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like I know her, but she still could have, and then I could have been the next target. And
so you just waited out on the balcony until the first responding officers get there.
The apartment directly across from mine, just like right here, I sat, as soon as I went outside and got on the radio, I went and sat right here. And that's when while I was standing up, I was crying. And it got worse when I sat down. And I couldn't hold it together. I was trying to hold it together so, you know, none of the neighbors would come out, because I didn't want them to freak out and then, you know, her come out with the gun. Because at that point, she was unresponsive. The door was locked, and I did not want to go in there with the possibility of her having a gun. I never would have thought that she would have grabbed my gun like that. There's been a few times I would put my duty belt in my car, depending on what I had to do. You know, when I got off, like take warrants or something like that, just depends. But typically I would, depending on what she wanted to do as far as cleaning or something like that, I would switch between having it in the hall closet when you first walk in on the right, or I would have it in the master bedroom. And I can't remember which way I had it this morning or today.
As the interview winds down, DeMarco asks a few final questions. He asks about Matthew's clothes.
The clothes you have on now was the clothes you were wearing tonight?
Yes, I didn't have time, you know, with everything going on. I didn't think anything about getting any other clothes, so I didn't know if y'all would want these or not. I didn't bring any other ones with me.
The interview ends, but in other rooms at the Griffin Police Station, more interviews are taking place. One by one, officers on the scene at the Boynton apartment earlier that night are brought in. At 4:20 a.m., Special Agent Danielle Stewart sits down with Matthew Boynton's friend and fellow officer, Josh Guthrie. He walks Stewart through the night when Matthew called him to meet at his apartment.
His wife, he said, is having, you know, suicidal thoughts or whatever. He's like, I've already called EMS. He's like, they're already on the way over there.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like for you to ride over here so somebody's here, you know. They've been going through, you know, a rough time or whatever.
Okay.
I think talking about splitting up and things like that.
Okay.
You know, and he told me, he's like, I just want somebody to be over there, you know,
mm-hmm.
in case anything happens, you know, I have a witness, you know, I'd get a report or whatever. And as soon as he said that, you know, I told myself, okay, I'm on the way.
Okay.
So I hung up.
As perhaps Matthew's closest confidant at work, he also shares what he knows about Matthew's marriage, what he's told him.
He just said that, you know, I don't know exactly all they've had going on, you know.
Right.
He just said that, you know, she's physical with him sometimes, but she gets upset. I know he says he comes home and it's like they don't do anything right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can come home from having a great day at work. And he said, that's why I work so much overtime. You know, he's like, I'll come home and
mm-hmm.
whatever went wrong with the house, you know, she'll blame on him. You know, I don't even know an example that he'd give you.
Right.
You know, the clothes wasn't washed, or this is broken, it's your fault, or whatever. And he's like, man, I'm not happy anymore. He's like, no, I need to try to get out of this right here, get out of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he always talked good about her. He never really talked bad about her as far as, you know, downgrading her negative. He just said he wasn't happy in the relationship, and, you know, I told him, I said, I'm not going to encourage you either way, because you got to make that decision.
Right.
You know, I did tell him multiple times. I was like, you know, if you're not happy, it's probably not going to get any better. It's going to lead to worse things. I was like, so, I mean, but you got to make that call. So he's like, yeah, man, I think that's what I'm going to do, try to get out of it. And, you know, so that's about the extent of what he's told me or whatever, as far as what their relationship's going through. But I know he did tell me several times. He's like, man, he's like, yeah, she was, you know, beat on me and stuff. He's like, I can't, you know, take that anymore. So.
Right.
Guthrie then brings up another recent incident at the apartment when this time Jessica was the one who called police.
I know that she called, made a report. I don't know how long ago it was, a couple of days ago or something. They had to go out there and something about she tried to call him and he was gone. And I think he said he was asleep or something. And when he woke up, you know, it was a lot later, he had planned on sleeping or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, she had done called and tried to report that he kidnapped her son or something because she couldn't get in touch with him. And they told him, you know, of course, y'all are married. You know, you can't, not any binding documents for custody. You can't kidnap somebody, so.
Right.
Griffin Police Officer Robert Jones is called in for an interview just after 5 a.m. Jones was one of the first officers to respond to the scene that night. GBI Special Agent Daniel Stewart asks what Jones knows about Matthew's movements when he arrived home.
Did he go inside the apartment?
He did say that he did go in because we found his keys and his cell phone inside. I had to ask him, I said, did you go inside? And he said his babies were crying, so he went inside. And he laid his keys on the counter. He couldn't remember where he put his phone at.
Mm-hmm.
But his phone, I believe, was next to the microwave in the kitchen.
Okay.
Yeah, he said he was, remember, I was trying to talk to him and try to get a little bit of information from him, and he was, like, hysterical, so I couldn't get much from him. But
right.
He did say, because I was asking him, I said, did you go inside? And he kept asking for his phone. And I said, well, where's it at? Where's that? He said, it's somewhere up there. He said, my keys and my phone are up there.
Okay.
And so I looked. I was thinking it was outside, but that's when I noticed his keys were on the counter and his phone was near the microwave.
Okay.
And I just left it there. I told nobody not to mess with it.
Right.
Jones is then asked about finding Jessica Boynton in the closet and what he discovered.
I know when we went in, I guess that's the closet where he keeps all his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
His gun belt was hanging on the closet on the right side, along with his uniforms. Obviously, I can tell that it was his service weapon, had a gun light on it, and his was missing from his holster.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I cleared the weapon, there was 12 rounds in the magazine, and there was one in the chamber. And I don't know if he kept one in the pipe or not.
Right. Everybody carries it differently. Okay. So you said her head was between two pillows. So, like, you know, she's laying on her left side. There's one pillow.
Yeah, I think there's like it was a black and white striped pillow. I mean, I don't even know if her face was even touching the floor.
Okay.
But I do remember it was in between two items, and I know the one on the right, where her face was a pillow.
Okay.
I did notice the bullet holes.
Okay.
There was one that was angled. I guess she was facing the door, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And the bullet was angled up this way.
Okay.
And then we noticed it again when we was brought her out. It came through the wall and back into the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was like maybe 8 or 9 inches up the wall, kind of in the middle of the wall, almost like a straight shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that one ended up going through the living room and the baby's room.
In coming days, as Jessica Boynton lies in a medically induced coma, Matthew Boynton is brought back in by investigators. Not to answer questions, but to sign forms, consent forms. But the conversation goes beyond just signing documents.
And what we're going to do is, two things. One is, since you're still her husband and you have the legal authority, especially since she's in the position of not being able to give consent, but we're going to draw some blood from her. And what that is we're going to be doing that to do touch DNA on the gun. And why we're doing that is obviously, one, to corroborate everything that's, you know, we believe that's what happened. And that way it also eliminates the possibility of her family saying, you know, you had something involved in this or whatever, you know, because I'm sure
that's what they're all assuming.
Right. We still have your gun in custody right now.
Y'all can have it. I just want my light back.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they don't try to get me that gun back.
Yeah. Well, I know eventually the chief would eventually like to get his officer back as well as his, you know, service weapon back as well. So we're going to try to expedite this as, you know, as fast as possible. And when I mean expedite, you know, within the next few weeks to a month.
A picture is emerging, one that Matthew Boynton is the first to paint. Then other officers describe, officers who knew or heard about Matthew's marriage, the repeated calls to police, the fighting, Jessica's affair years back, and then Matthew's new girlfriend. A marriage in trouble, on the brink of divorce, now rocked by what appears to be self-inflicted violence. But another picture is starting to emerge, and it brings with it questions. Questions about what really happened in that closet. Questions about what really happened in the hours before police find Jessica Boynton. First, there's neighbors, two couples in two different apartment units, telling police about gunshots over an hour before Matthew Boynton says he returned home and heard gunshots. Matthew states he heard shots later, closer to 1 a.m., as he ran toward the apartment. But none of the neighbors report hearing shots then. There's also the shooting itself. Two shots fired in the closet, one of them at a downward angle to the top of Jessica's head. To be blunt, it's not a common method of committing suicide. There's the fact that Jessica Boynton didn't like guns. She didn't have any experience with guns and, from what we know, never fired one. And then there's Jessica's frame of mind. Clearly, the demise of her marriage was weighing on her. Matthew tells investigators she was crying and upset. She shut the door on his face that night. But was she at the point of no return, where she'd end her own life, leave her kids without a mother? But with Jessica Boynton lying in a medically induced coma, answers to a growing list of questions are elusive. Until...
My name is Jessica Lester, and when I woke up from a coma, I was really confused. I didn't know why I was in a hospital. People were telling me that I was in an accident, and by that, I didn't know what they meant. Like, what kind of accident?
Next time on The Officer's Wife.
You don't remember what happened in Walmart? You don't remember any conversations you had with Matt or anything like that? Okay, do you remember coming home at all?
No.
Okay.
Because at Walmart, he was wearing a gray sweatshirt, and on the porch, he's wearing a red, and he says, oh, I didn't change. You clearly changed. A lot of people caught on to that one.
Deep down, I know exactly what happened, and that is for sure that I didn't do it, and I think that's all I need to know.
The Officer's Wife is a Vault Studios production in collaboration with WXIA 11 Alive in Atlanta. The Vault Studios team includes executive producers Will Johnson and Adam Ostro, and investigative journalist Jessica Knoll. Audio production by Richard Humphreys at Tacoma Media in Silver Spring, Maryland. Visit our website at vaultstudios.com to learn more about our podcasts, including Bardstown and our weekly show, True Crime Chronicles. And you can find us on Facebook at Inside the Crime Vault if you'd like to talk about this case and learn about other stories we're covering. If you or someone you know is in crisis, there are options available to help you cope. You can call the Suicide Prevention Lifeline at any time to speak with someone and get support. For confidential support available 24/7 for everyone in the United States, call 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255.